teacher this morning. They've just left, as we have done last time. Oh, my apologies. Yeah, you know, you have an executive now leading the delegation. Honorable Deputy Minister, we started with the AG this morning so that by the time you come in, at least we have an understanding of what is the status of the department and how do we get clarities from you, because the clarities that you will give to us, they will assist us to formulate recommendations for the BRRR. And thank you for coming. There's an agenda in front of you. We were quite democratic, at least because everybody's here. The first company, this is going to go according to this agenda that is in front of you. So we will give to you first, Honorable Deputy Minister, to say something before your department and your entities. Over to you.
Good morning, Chairperson. Yes. Honorable members. Thank you very much, Chairperson, for inviting.
Say to the members, I received the apology of the minister. She actually wanted to come and present to be here. That's why we have a deputy minister today. She's out of the country. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. That indeed is the case. The minister was appreciative of the invitation that was extended to her to lead the delegation of the department as they come to present the report, the department itself as well as the entity. Therefore, she requested me to convey her apologies because she's out of the country attending an international conference dealing with desertification under the auspices of the United Nations. So, Honourable Chairperson, we are pleased that we could come here to walk you through our activities for the period of the 2016-2017 financial year. The annual report, as it stands, highlights various areas where we have done well and different areas where we have not done so well. Overall, we have noted some improvements, and the head of the department, the DG, will talk to the areas of achievement, areas that remain a challenge, and the new issues that we have to deal with going forward. Our activities for the period under review find expression in the mandate and scope of our work. The National Development Plan, the 9-point plan, as announced in the 2015-2016 State of the Nation Address, the 2014-2019 medium-term strategic framework, and the election manifesto of the ruling party. We believe that we have made remarkable progress on all 7 key policy areas that inform our vision and mission. While there is still room for improvement, the annual report does indicate a couple of aspects that require special attention. The AG's report, as we have no doubt been made aware, also highlights areas where we fell short of meeting our predetermined objectives and goes on to offer advice on what needs to be done. We greatly appreciate the role of the AG in evaluating our work, and most importantly, the guidance and advice the AG offers us from time to time. It is also true that the labor market policy environment remains extremely dynamic, and as such requires constant monitoring and evaluation, as well as high levels of agility. The pace of changes in the labor market policy space comes with its own challenges, and the inherent contestation becomes even sharper. While this is useful in terms of informing our tooling and retooling efforts, the fact of the matter is that most of the key drivers are often more exogenous than internal, meaning that our work is shaped more by external factors than what we can control. Our work is extremely linked to the inextricably linked to the performance of the economy, domestically and globally. What happens in the global economic trend tends to have a direct bearing on the domestic economy and by extension the labor market world of work. This means that what could be a sound labor market policy could become obsolete within a short space of time. Furthermore, the real threat of the fourth industrial revolution is no longer a myth, but a reality. As companies intensify the shift from manual labor to robotics, the question is, what is our state of readiness to deal with the challenges that come with it? In some instances, Chairperson, improvements in productivity come with unintended consequences of job losses. Sectors that used to be labor-intensive are rapidly shifting to capital-intensive business models, thereby forcing a rethink on the kinds of labor market policies to deal with this challenge. Our Labor Law Foundation has for many years been modeled around workers as human beings, with little or no anticipation of robots taking over the space. Workers used to rely on trade unions for protection against abuses, but today unions are finding it difficult to fulfill their obligations. More and more workers are sidestepping their unions and come straight to our labor centers for help. This has placed an incredible strain on our capacity to provide services. This has also put a strain in our labor center infrastructure as volumes of workers requiring assistance rise. I'm merely raising these matters in order to illustrate that more often than not, we're dealing with an environment that is evolving all the time. As I hand over, Chairperson, to the Director General and his team to take us through the annual report for the period 2016-2017, I wish to talk to the size of the delegation. It's quite huge, and I'm sure some of the members have noticed one of them was counting us. We talked about this. Unfortunately, I became aware of the size of the delegation only after they came here to Cape Town. I would have, as I did, advise them that they should cut down on the numbers, maybe one or two people. At least not more, not less, not more than two people, unless it's absolutely essential that a third one be the part of this delegation must represent the various entities and branches, so that we don't incur unnecessary expenses for coming down here. I don't think it has to do with the fact, Chairperson, that usually where I come from, when I travel on occasion, I try to travel with as many of my tribesmen as possible. I don't think that's what they thought was the case here. It's just that they thought that there was a need to ensure that no question remains unanswered because someone is not available. But my view is that they should be in a position to understand what questions are likely to rise, so that it's not really necessary for all of them to be coming down. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Deputy Minister.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Good morning, Chairperson and the Honourable Members. Let me start by introducing this huge delegation. Just to minimize or to create some sort of an illusion that the delegation is not too big, I'll start with the department, because we're going to start with the presentation, and then thereafter, as the entities come in, I'll then introduce who's part of their delegation. From the head office department side, we have the deputy minister has been introduced already. We have Steny Ngcobo, who's the the chief financial officer of the supported employment enterprises, and we have Mr. Nondwango, who is the CEO of the supported employment enterprises. And then we have Ms. Marsha Bronkhorst, who's the COO of the department, sitting right next to the Deputy Minister. We have Mr. Murotoba, who's the DDG Public Employment Services. We have Ms. Egi Muila, who's the DDG Inspection Enforcement Services. And we have Mr. Virgil Seafield, who's the DDG LPNIR. We have Ms. Bahumi Matebesi, who is the DDG Corporate Services. We have Mr. Beki Maduna, who is the CFO of the department. We have Mr. Teboho Tijana, who is the Chief Communication Officer of the department. And we have also Advocate Ndleki, who comes from the office of the DG, Mr. Welile Dwengo, who will be assisting us with the presentations. We also have staff from the ministry, led by the chief of staff, Mr. Schneeman. We have Mr. Nochikila from the deputy minister's office. We have Mr. Chwete, who is the spokesperson of, for the ministry. I think that's just about it, Chairperson.
How many people from each entity that you have, which portfolios?
From the compensation fund, Chairperson, we have the Commissioner, Mr. Mafata. Where is he? Oh, right behind me. And we have Ms. Ndombekhaya Kamata, who is the newly appointed Chief Director, Corporate Services. And we have Ms. Millie Reuters, who is the Chief Director, Compensation Services. She's also newly appointed. We have the CFO of the Compensation Fund, Mr. Johnny Modipa. And we have Linda Kota, who is the Director of Financial Reporting. So from Compensation Fund, we have five people.
Any entity that has more than five? Because I think your CFO, your CEO, your commissioner, they should be here. So where do you have more than that? Okay,
we have, I think the compensation fund and the CCMA delegations and NEDLEC, the CCMA delegation and the compensation fund are the biggest in terms of numbers.
With compensation fund having five
CCMA,
with the portfolios that you have highlighted.
Yes, CCMA
that
you
like to
well.
Give answers to the committee. Okay, thank you. Continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. We have submitted the report to the committee, and the report of the annual report, as submitted, is in the format that is prescribed. And through the interactions that we've had with the committee throughout the financial year, the committee expressed a need for us to demonstrate some level of impact of the work that we do. The committee requested us to indicate, for instance, where the sectors that we have inspected. So what I've tried to do in the presentation that I'm going to give now is to provide that and contextualize it, to give a reflection of what is happening in the labor market with regards to employment, poverty eradication, and a whole host of other labor market challenges that we're experiencing. And if the committee agrees, then my colleagues can then take questions. will reflect on the issues also that were raised by the Auditor General in their presentation and in our joint report as well. So as the Deputy Minister has indicated that the work that we do is impacted upon by our internal and also our external environment. So basically what we want to cover is to look at our expenditure information. What is it that we were allocated as a Department of Labor? What would we use that money for? And also just a snapshot on the overall performance of the department and what is our policy mandate, the operating environment, and we want to look at the South African economy as the Deputy Minister has touched on, and creation of decent work, rate of transformation in the country, and we'll reflect on the digital review process, and we'll talk a bit about the economic efficiency and productivity, and decent employment creation, governance, oversight, and we then reflect on the AG findings. The slide number three is a reflection of the appropriation, what has been allocated to us as a department, and how much have we spent. As a department, we spent 97.1% of the allocated budget, which translates to 2.76 billion, and we were allocated 2.8 billion, and we're reflecting the variance of 81 billion. In slide four, we've used that allocation to realize the performance that we are depicting on the slide there, which started in quarter one with a 62%, quarter two 69%, quarter three 72%, and quarter four 79%. And in the report that we sent to the committee, we're reflecting the overall performance of the department as being 74%. And this is the audited audited report, which reflects 74% overall performance. Our policy mandate is to improve economic efficiency and productivity, and that's how that's why we structure the way we are as a department. We want to, we also want to reflect on the creation of decent employment. We have to promote labor standards and fundamental rights at work. We must provide adequate social safety nets to protect vulnerable workers. We must ensure that there are sound labor relations. We must eliminate inequality and discrimination in the workplace. We must enhance occupational health and safety awareness and compliance in the workplace. We must give value to social dialogue in the formulation of sound and responsive legislation and policies to attain labor market flexibility for competitiveness of enterprises, which is balanced with the promotion of decent employment. The entities will reflect on some of this policy mandates, Chairperson. Just to give a highlight on the operating environment of the department externally, and during the course of 2016, the impact of various factors such as domestic political issues and the U.S. federal rate hike decisions had a bad effect on the rand, sending the rand spiraling into further depreciation. The rand weakened in the last 3 years against the U.S. dollar, which has probably affected the persistently weak labor markets. The negative trends in the global economy have contributed to an ever-worsening unemployment situation across the world. In South Africa, the unemployment rate has relatively remained constant. It was 27.7% in March 2017, as compared to 26.7% a year ago. Employment declines were reflected in two of the 10 industries, namely community and mining. This is on a year-on-year comparison. The analysis of the department's administrative data has also shown that the South African labor market is still in crisis. There's a need of real change to address matching skills demand to achieve the desired outcome of the National Development Plan. The impact of these trends remains severe with the new entrants in the labor market, for example, youth and women. So over the year, which is March 2016 to March 2017, the South African labor market grew by 538,000 new jobs, employment increased in 7 provinces out of 9. The highest increase in employment was recorded in Gauteng, which registered 298,000 jobs, and the lowest was Limpopo, which registered 3,000. And about 66% of new jobs created were from the formal sector, which is non-agricultural, over the same period. In the informal sector, trade and transport industries have largely recorded positive employment growth, but this would probably not constitute a problem if the new jobs created broadly fall within the notion of decent work. The service sector, which includes finance industry, was the main contributor to new job opportunities, opportunities growth in 2016, where employment creation was also largely nearly 120,000 new opportunities. There has been a major progress in the share of women working in the formal sector of the economy, with a large number of women in all population groups. The move away from vulnerable employment into wage and salaried work can be a major step towards economic freedom and self-determination for many women. There was an increase of 2% in registered trade unions since 2014 and 2015 to 2015 and 2016 financial year. And as the Deputy Minister has indicated, unions play a large role in terms of ensuring that workers are fully represented and the rights that are enshrined in the basic condition of employment are enjoyed by the workers. We also have to reflect on the stability in the labor market. A total of 122 strikes were recorded for the entire year of 2016-2017. This represents a 10% strike increase as compared to a total of 110 strike incidents recorded in 2015. The South African labor market lost a total of 946,000 working days as a result of 122 work stoppages. This represents 4.7% increase in working days lost in 2016 as compared to 903,000 days lost in 2015. From the time of the recession in 2008, the number of working days lost decreased substantially, though, by 38% up to 2015 as a result of work stoppages. And that is why CCMA works tirelessly whenever there are these strikes to make sure that they don't last that long because of the impact of each and every strike in the economy and also the livelihoods of their workers. There were 90,228 workers involved in labor disputes in 2016. The lowest figure since strike records captured in 2013. In terms of wages lost, the South African labor economy lost about 161 million due to work stoppages in 2016 as compared to 116 million in 2015. This reflects an increase of 38.2% in wages lost due to work stoppages. This is a year-on-year analysis. By industry, the community industry was highly affected by strike incidents, followed by manufacturing and transport in 2016. Most of work stoppages were due to wages, bonus, and other compensation demands. The strike incidents and the national development, the NTP refers to the high number of strikes as an indicator of the labor relations environment having become particularly fraught. In this regard, the results in the strike report indicate that the share of unprotected strikes in the total strike action is still high in 2016. This pattern of strike does provide cause for concern in the labor relations and environment. And that is why all of us as social partners work tirelessly at NEDLAC to make sure that the policy decisions that have to be made are made timeously so that we can ensure that there's stability in the labor market. The next slide talks about the creation of decent employment. Here we premised this on the ability of enterprises to comply with the laws, and secondly, the efficiency and productivity of the enterprises, and thirdly, the efficiency of our inspectors to enforce the labor laws. This slide talks about inspection and compliance. Our focus has been on the transformation of the labor market, the protection of vulnerable workers, and the use of legal instruments. I think we made a mistake there by saying illegal. We wanted to say the use of legal instruments to achieve compliance and contribution to poverty eradication. If you look at this slide says the rate of transformation in the country, especially at the top management level, continues to be a challenge. The rate of transformation at senior management level does not respond to the transformational agenda of the country. The Department of Labor is looking at proposed changes in terms of the legislative reform process. And if you really look at the number of inspections that we've done, the DG review process, there were about 808 inspections that we did. I wanted to correct that, Chairperson, I apologize. It should have been 88 inspected employers under the DG review process, and 138 of them were non-compliant, which means that only 11 complied. And if you go back to that slide, which is slide 15, that slide 15 tells us a big story in terms of the attitude towards transformation in the labor market. And if our inspections are anything to go by, it means that we have to, all of us, make a concerted effort to make sure that the designated employers comply with the law. Of those that were not complied or that did not comply, we took 360 companies to court. And if you look at the amount that we are claiming in terms of administrative penalties that must be paid by these companies, it ranges to, it's in the region of 23 million. And so far, we have registered successes amounting to 1.3 billion that has already been paid as administrative fines for these companies to for their failure to comply with employment equity. And as an additional measure, we are planning to use Section 53 of the Employment Equity Act to force designated employers to comply with the Employment Equity Act, leading up to the achievement of the transformative imperatives. Section 53 of the Employment Equity Act says it actually compels the state to see to it that whoever participates in terms of the contracts that we issue as state, whoever participates must comply fully with employment equity. So we want to put that as a condition so that we drive transformation. The next slide talks a little bit about what Productivity SA does, and the CEO will delve deeper in terms of the programs that the programs and activities that they are running. Most importantly is that we allocate 59 million to the Productivity South Africa for them to do productivity organization solutions, turnaround solutions, value chain competitiveness, and the CEO will talk about how the entity has performed. But it's very, very important to reflect on the jobs that were saved as a result of the activities of this entity, and most importantly, the productivity improvements, improvement gains that we have realized as a result of the initiatives of the of this program. If we go to the protection of vulnerable workers, which reflects the number of inspections that we have done, what we did, Chairperson, we took the total number of inspections that we've done, looked at all the different sectors that we've inspected, and we took the top six sectors that are actually becoming a problem in terms of the level of compliance. And we said, we want to share this information with the committee, and it's in line with what the committee has asked us to do. So 50% of the inspections that we do were largely in the wholesale and retail, and followed by which is 50%, and followed by 20%, which is the construction, and 8% each, which is the domestic sector and the community services. So the next slide reflects that of these top six, the wholesale and retail, we have observed some level of non-compliance with regards to the sectoral determination that is applicable to the sector. And again, 50% of that is wholesale and retail. And I think that is a reflection of the challenges that we have with the wholesale and retail sector in as far as wages that they are paying to workers. And the second one is the construction, which is sitting at 22%. We know the kind of relationship that construction industries would have with their workers, and I think that reflects that reality. The areas of non-compliance, if you look at wholesale and retail, we're talking about minimum wages, unpayment of wages, non-payment of Sunday work, no information on remuneration, written particulars of employment, and non-payment of overtime, and also paying of overtime, especially during public holidays. In the agriculture, again, is also the non-payment of wages, information regarding to remuneration, and written particulars of employment and payment for overtime and meal intervals. And domestic sector, no information on remuneration, written particulars of employment, and non-payment of wages. And in the private security, minimum wages and payment of wages, provident fund, which is becoming a huge problem, where companies are deducting money for provident fund and they are not paying it when these workers are supposed to claim this provident fund, they don't get access to the provident fund. The construction industry is a similar thing with regards to non-payment of wages and written particulars of employment. This is interesting because we have a phenomenon of a buggy brigade where people take people from the street corners, and these guys don't even know where the names of the employers, so they work, and when they are done, they're not paid. When they go and claim, they don't even, the guy who picked them up is no longer there. So these are some of the challenges that we're experiencing. What did we do with all these things? We took the wholesale and retail companies that were not complying, about 218 of them, we referred them to court so that they could be prosecuted. So in total, we referred about 909 employers to court so that they could be prosecuted. But most importantly, Chairperson, people come to the department and complain about the fact that they have not been paid over time, they have not been paid in line with the different sectoral determination. And we've been able to recover an amount of just over 5 million. And these are small amounts of 200 rands, 300 rands, 400 rands, but they are very important because in some instances they determine whether someone will have food on the table the following day. So this is a collection of those small amounts that we have been able to recover on behalf of the complainants. We also have the responsibility of ensuring that we find employment for work seekers, and that's a function that is done by the public employment services. What we want to reflect on this slide, Chairperson, is that a total of 400,000 registered work seekers are young people ages between 16 and 35 years old, which is a clear depiction of the problem that we have with regards to youth unemployment. If you look at, I think the UIF will also tell you about the number of young people that are drawing unemployment benefits. It's actually alarming because more young people are drawing unemployment compared to the older, workers. So this next slide also depicts a picture that our employment counselors are experiencing when they do employment counseling. 197,000 work seekers were provided with employment counseling, and this is 29% of total work seekers that we have on our database that are registered. And this total of 147,000 work seekers counseled is young people aged between 16 and 35 years. And again, it's a depiction of the current challenge that we have. We wanted to look at placement by opportunity types. A total of 12,518 work seekers were placed in employment opportunities. And 8,000 of that, which is 64%, were placed in informal jobs, which is very, very important. And 20% of that figure were placed in projects. And we know that projects have a definite end date. So they may be in projects for a limited, they're in projects for limited duration, and they come back, they draw unemployment insurance, and they remain unemployed again. And 7% of that, they are in, were in learnerships, and the remaining 9% was placed in apprenticeships and SIPS projects. Of significant importance, Chairperson, is that when we amended the Labour Relations Act and the Basic Conditions of Employment and also the Employment Equity Act, we wanted to deal with a particular phenomenon, which is this atypical kind of employment that we have. This slide, this slide tells us is that even though we have these legislations and this phenomenon of temporary employment services and private employment services still persists, because you have a big chunk of workers procured, of their services procured through temporary employment services and private employment and agencies, as opposed to them being permanently employed. They are still on contract, and it's about 75% that we are reflecting there, whereas it's only 11% of these employees that are, or these work seekers that were employed on a permanent basis. Now, this calls into question the effectiveness of the deeming provisions that we have, and the Director CCMA maybe will delve deeper into this issue of the deeming provisions, because they deal every day with cases of this nature. And I'm sure the committee met with AG, and the committee has gone through our annual report. We want to, in the annual report, we submit to the committee that we have audit committee that are fully functional in terms of governance and oversight responsibility. We have an internal audit that is fully functional, risk committees that are fully functional across the portfolio of the department. And we have also appointed independent chairpersons for provincial risk management committees, and the effectiveness of these structures has resulted in the Department of Labor receiving an unqualified audit, albeit with material findings. And if you look at throughout the portfolio, the committee members, and you would have noticed that these unqualified audit opinions, to a greater extent, are followed by or are linked to the material findings as well, which means that even though we celebrate that we have unqualified audit, we still have a lot of work to do to make sure that we clean up those material findings. Also in the report, there's an observation by AG which we agree to as a department, that that overall the portfolio has regressed. We now have two disclaimers in the department, which is the compensation fund and the unemployment insurance fund, and that is due to lack of proper financial accounting processes and systems to accurately report on investment in terms of the required accounting standards. This is something that we are already working on as a department to make sure that the misunderstanding that we had in terms of how we should account for the investment is now cleared up. There's ongoing communication between the two funds with the PIC, and we're at least happy with the process that is underway to make sure that this thing becomes a thing of the past. And in our understanding is that even though previously this was not a requirement, we have moved swiftly to ensure that this reporting requirement is complied with. The submission of financial statements containing misstatement is being attended to in order to prevent recurrence and repeat of this finding in 2017 and 2018. The committee will also get the benefit of the different entities reflecting on what is it that they are doing to make sure that when they submit the financial statement, there are no misstatements. And because this issue is recurring, we need to make sure that we address it as speedily as we should be. So, Chairperson, I thought that I'll give that background to the committee before we entertain questions and also before the entities do their presentation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, TG. Members, Honorable Bakri, the ground.
Thank you, Deputy Minister and DG. I really appreciate it. I want to start right at the end with the AG, because we've just had a report from the AG. The report, quite frankly, is horrific.
Okay, continue. Questions on the, or comments on the comments, eh?
Yes, I'd like to comment on what the DG has.
Okay.
And questions, sorry. I wanted to comment and question on what the DG has just told us.
Okay.
Am I free to ask whatever I wish?
That's fine.
Thank you. If I can just have a look, First, I want to just go quickly through what the report was made to the committee by the AG so that you can then comment on it, because the report from the AG has been absolutely horrific. First, they say they've experienced a regression in audit outcomes over the past 4 years, and you've been unable to improve the quality of the financial statements. That's the first thing. The second thing, compensation funds. In the past 5 years, you've been unable to express an audit. They've been unable to express an audit opinion because they just haven't had the appropriate supporting documentation. UIF, they've experienced in the four consecutive regressions, where you haven't had proper accounting systems and processes to accurately report on investments. Department of Labor, CCMA, and NEDLAC, you've had problems with employees' costs, provisions, leave entitlements, etc. That seems to be almost corrected, but there's been ongoing problems there, which is horrific when you think about it. It's the Department of Labor, after all. The financial health, both CF and UIF have significant reserves, but they can't be measured. They can't reliably measure them. So I'm not sure what's going on at the PIC or what your differences are between them, but I think it was close. It was over R1 billion, from what I understand, was at loggerheads. A real problem. And with regard to the financial statements, you've had, due to inadequate review processes, as the internal controls did not prevent, detect, or correct material misstatements, this is almost across the board. Department of Labor, CCMA, SEE, and CF. They're real problems. And this has been for over 3 years. I'm just picking out some of the lowlights. So I can ask you to comment on them. There are lots more. I will be taking that up with you in due course. But with the exception of the CCMA, the portfolio failed to take effective steps to prevent irregular and or fruitless and wasteful expenditure. There's been a concerning regression from the prior, and it seems to be getting worse. Revenue management. CEF and SEE did not establish systems, procedures, and processes to ensure efficient and effective revenue management. NEDLAC incurred expenditure in excess of the approved budget. CEF did not take effective and appropriate disciplinary steps against officials who permitted irregular and or fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Disciplinary hearings were not held for confirmed cases of financial misconduct committed by officials. The portfolio incurred irregular expenditure of almost 65 million rand during 2016-17 financial year, with the major contributors being the UIF and the CCMA. UIF 35.5 and CCMA 19 million rand. The portfolio incurred further fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 781,000 rand, of which 300,000 was incurred by Department of Labour and 445 by NEDLAC. The compensation fund. An allegation of financial misconduct. The investigation has been completed. We look forward to seeing it. But you haven't finalised it yet. I'm not sure why, if it's completed, what's going on with that, and when can we see this report. And then there's a total of 152 financial misconduct cases were investigated this year, of which 119 are still in progress. When are they going to be finished? Are those people still in employment? Are they still earning salary? 33 have been completed without the proper investigation. What's happened to those 33 if you've completed it? Have you suspended them? Are they disciplinary hearings? Are they still earning salary? Etc. 135 fraud-related cases. 49 have been completed. Are they still there? Are they still earning salary? Have you had disciplinary hearings? Have you dismissed them? 7 were in reporting stage. What's happened about that? 67 were ongoing. How long have they been ongoing? How long are they still going to take? What's going on? And 12 have not even been started. I'm not sure how many of you refer to the South African police, but maybe you can tell us and how far they are. The key controls were mainly due to regression at the UIF and action plans which were inadequately implemented, monitored, and resulting in numerous repeat findings. The leadership needs to lead the initiative to ensure that all items on the action plans are adequately addressed and regulated and monitored, as well as holding staff accountable for poor performance, non-implementation, or inadequate implementation of management action plans. Lack of sufficient, adequately qualified and skilled people to support senior management and the operation. I can go on and on. I think there's another 17 points that I have there. I don't want to spend too much time on it. If I may continue, Madam Chair, I know I've spent a bit of time on that, but that's just the one area.
You can continue your questions.
Thank you. Deputy Minister, if one looks at this overall report presented by the DG, and thank you for DG for a comprehensive report. But if you have a look at it, this report, it appears to be a drop in the ocean. I go to the very last slide where the DG was referring to people employed by contract. Isn't it about time we had a re-look at our labour laws? The majority of people are employed by contract despite the fact that there is this new law. And we need to have a look at it. One of the suggestions I can make is possibly exemption from that particular legislation for small businesses, maybe in the townships, maybe small black business, something of that nature, because I can promise you none of these statistics include those businesses. These are formal businesses you've been looking at, and certainly doesn't look at it. So when you say 75% of the opportunities registered are contracts, I can promise you the figures are much greater than that, because what you're really looking at is you're looking at people who are in formal employment and not informal employment by any stretch of the imagination. And it makes a mockery of the actual law itself. Then I have a look and it says a total of 12,500 people were placed in employment opportunities. That's not even a drop in the entire Atlantic Ocean. We've got 10 million people looking for jobs in South Africa and you are placing 12,500. What is going on? Well, what's the issue here? I'm not blaming the department because I think you've actually got the wrong tools. But this is an impossible task. I mean, we feel as if we're living in Wonderland when I look at that. When there are 10 million people looking, able people looking, and you are able to place 12,500. There's something wrong. It's not fair to the department. It's not fair to the DG. But there's something wrong with our system. When you look at employment counselling, we're sitting on a time bomb. The age group 26 to 35, just from your own figures, is the biggest amount, 83,000. I mean, this is impossible, absolutely impossible. Yes, you're giving people counselling and you're registering them, but you're not giving them jobs and you can't. I think, again, the system is not fair, and that's why I'm asking you, Deputy Minister, please have a look at that. We're living here on the Titanic, and we are changing the deck chairs, because this is all this is doing, and it's not the fault of the department. It can't be the fault of the department. They're doing their job, but they've got the wrong tools. When you look at the system, and I know the system says decent employment creation. Well, you know what the minimum wage in South Africa is today? It's naught. That's the real minimum wage, is naught, because people can't find jobs. It doesn't help to keep looking for the decent jobs when we can only find 12,000. That doesn't help us. And again, we've got a budget allocated of 5.5 million. But again, this doesn't really help us. Again, it's a drop in the ocean, and I'm not blaming the department on this. I just don't know where we can go with this. We can't look at the same figures next year and the year thereafter. We just can't do it. Again, when you look at the thing, recovered funds on behalf of employees, this is fantastic. You've recovered 6 million rand, and it's great for those people. It's the Starfish Project. You've seen a whole beach full of starfish, and you've picked up one starfish and you've thrown it back in the ocean. You've saved that starfish. That's fantastic. But I can promise you this figure is billions, not the 6 million you've recovered. Absolutely billions. You've looked at the sectors, the referral to sectors at slide 23, and again, these sectors are all the formal sectors. Yes, you've looked at construction, private security, domestic, etc. Those are all the formal jobs. We know that job creation in the future in South Africa is going to be small business. We know that job creation in the future of South Africa is going to be small black business, and it's going to be small black businesses in the townships. They're creating jobs. The big companies aren't. They have jobless growth. It's no good even looking at them. You can do your thing over here, and you can investigate them, and it's not going to help us. You've identified the top six sectors. I'm not sure top six of what. Top six are people who aren't doing their jobs properly and not paying properly, not getting overtime, maybe not contributing to UIF, workman's compensation. But I'm telling you, and you know this, DG, the majority of the companies out there don't have anything like that. They've never been registered. They've never had any issue about what sort of wage. They never had UIF, workman's compensation, pay slips, nothing. That's the majority of the companies. You've investigated, I can't remember the figure you gave us, how many companies you had a look at, but that's a multiple of that of actual companies in the country. You're doing good work with the protection of vulnerable workers, and I thank you for that, and it is good, and this is one area where we need to keep pushing as much as possible. Again, also with Productivity South Africa, I commend you for that, because they are looking at turnaround solutions, and we are getting somewhere. But here you are, DG, it's slide 16. You inspected almost 5,000 companies. How many employers are there in South Africa? 100,000, 200,000, 300,000, maybe more? I tell you, there's more than 500,000 employers out there. And you inspected almost 5,000. Again, I'm not blaming the department, but this is just impossible. And you can only inspect really the people that are registered, that have addresses, that you know about. Those are the ones you can inspect. And even when you're inspecting there, you're finding 1,000 of them, of the 5,000, are non-compliant. What does that tell you? It doesn't help us that you've inspected 5,000 and you found almost 1,000 non-compliant. There's a real problem over here. And again, I'm not sure what the department can do about it. When you talk in slide number 13, the creation of decent employment, you premise this on the ability of the enterprises to comply with the labour laws. Well, that's fantastic. But which enterprises, in fact, are complying with the labour laws? Yes, Anglo-America maybe. They're aiming to comply with the labour laws. But you go and ask your inspectors to walk around Khayelitsha and have a look. Those businesses are eking out a living. None of them can comply with our labour laws. I mean, that's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And if I have to make a statement like that, I'm prepared to go with anyone in this room right now, and I'll show you 100 businesses 10 kilometres away from here that aren't complying with any labour laws whatsoever. And I can't even blame them. They're trying to survive. With the strikes in South Africa, that's good news, and I commend the CCMA for that. Because I think they've done a fantastic job, and they've probably rooted out most of the strikes that were about to happen. And I commend them for that, and there you've done a fantastic job. And I think the working relationship that we do have with the department and formal labour, this is formal labour now, I'm talking about unionised labour, that seems to be growing in leaps and bounds, and I commend you for that. And you've had 122 strikes recorded in the entire year. It's fantastic, absolutely fantastic. So well done on that. And I can assure you, if the department wasn't here, we'd have a multiple of that of strikes and unrest at the workplace. And of course, I agree with you with regards to the highlights in the South African economy. A lot of this is because the economy is going downhill, and someone needs to have a re-look at it. Hence, some of my questions pointed at the Deputy Minister. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe next time we must not allow Honorable Begram to leave, because when he used to leave a meeting midway, I noticed that he makes his own presentation. It was more of a presentation than question time that he utilized. But when we'll allow him, he is celebrating his Christmas anyway. Chair, coming to the questions. When the strike has increased by 10%, 10% is a sizable figure. What interventions or what is the plan of the department to reduce this, because it has an impact on the economy of our country? The second one is when we go to slide 25, where we have 500,000 work seekers that have been registered. Yes, I understand 150,000 were provided with employment, but is there a way of ensuring that as we register 500,000, even the number of those absorbed in the market increases, because by the look of things now, it's not assisting. On slide 26, the DG's presentation is indicating that there are work seekers who are registered, but they are in the age group 60 to 61. Is 60 not a retirement age in South Africa? If you are still registering them at 60, where is hope of getting employment for a 60-year-old? Is that possible? Slide 30 shows that you have effective structures for your audit and all the other areas, and you are indicating here that they are fully functional. But that does not tally with what is captured in slide 31. Because in slide 31, despite the functional structures, there's a regression which has been observed by the AG's office. Why is there such a disjunction when we have claimed to have functional structures? Also on slide 31, I think it's a bullet before the last one. In that bullet, you are saying, even though previously this was not a requirement, we have moved swiftly to ensure that this reporting requirement is complied with. What was not a requirement? Because I think in the upper bullets, you are not talking to what is captured there, what was not a requirement previously and has become a requirement now. I'm concerned about the performance of UIF and compensation fund, because in slide 31 you are clearly indicating that they lack proper financial accounting processes and systems to accurately report. What plan is in place? Because any entity which is unable to put systems in place to report, which is a fundamental thing, especially that is on financials that they have to report, it is really a danger to the operations of the entity. So what is the remedy? Thanks, Chair.
Any more questions to both DG and the Deputy Minister? Yes, Honorable America.
Thank you, ma'am. Speaking after my colleagues, leaves one with little gaps in the presentation, because I'm not to a large extent covered by what was previously asked. But I want to just get more clarity with regard to the audit opinion with regard to the investment of the compensation fund and the UIF. The DG was saying towards the end of his presentation that, you know, made it off as if it was a misunderstanding that has been sort of to a degree cleared up. But that's not the impression that I have gotten when, you know, we seek clarity from the AG's office with regard to that. And I can tell you this is what was said. You know, we had unlisted and listed investments, and the way in which the reliability of the reporting is tested is fairly, in my view, fairly objective and thorough. So with regard to the compensation fund, you know, the figures presented could not, to a certain degree, reliably verified, although because of the lack of source documents, lack of information that was provided by the fund itself. But that was not, you know, but I need to say that there was not an intervention on the part of the fund to mislead the AG's office or to cajole the AG's office into accepting the representations that were made by the fund. But insofar as the UIF is concerned, I mean, with similar challenges, UIF in fact, you know, tried to intervene and to get the PIC to provide the AG's office with the required information that would support the assertion or their representation. Now that's a major problem for me, and we know that these two funds are dealing with billions of rands, and if due to a lack of internal controls, to a lack of verifiable information, it opens up both the UIF and the compensation fund for consequences that one wouldn't dare to contemplate, because millions and millions of people are dependent upon the liquidity of those funds, and if huge, you know, amounts are going missing. I don't say it did, you know, I say because of the lack of internal controls, because of lack of balance, and is that in the long run it could possibly jeopardize the liquidity of those funds. And I think, DG, that's a critical area that needs to be attended to, and one cannot simply just make it off as a misunderstanding, and those misunderstandings have been sort of cleared up. We want evidence, you know, that's been done. And secondly, insofar as the outstanding disciplinary cases are concerned, and I think that we as a committee need to provide it with the spreadsheet that was forwarded to the auditors to indicate where in the process and at what stage all those disciplinary cases are, because it's a big problem if they are not firm and decisive action taken against those employees who commit disciplinary infractions, because it just creates a culture of impunity. And once that culture becomes part of the organizational culture, then certainly we will have the sort of audit outcomes that we have received. Thanks a lot. Thank you, Deputy Minister, for your presence. It was good seeing you again. Thanks a lot.
Yes, thank you, members. Also, Honorable Lepekwa.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Deputy Minister, for being here with us. DG, I need to get clarity on things, four items here. On page 16, you indicated an amount that was paid back, which is 1.3. I think maybe I couldn't hear you whether it's a billion or it's a million there. It's just clarity on the amount that was paid back. Then on page 23, the issue of court cases that were referred to courts for. Then I want to check, do get report back on the outcome of those cases.
And how many have you received up to so far? Because you're not the first ones to be referred, on the ones that were referred before. And page 6 of your report indicates a constant unemployment rate changes. So I want to check, is it increasing or is it? Because according to my, I see an increase in unemployment, but your report states constant. So there's a mixed feeling there for myself. And page 30, the AG's report is indicating functional committees on the UIF and compensation fund. By the outcome of the findings of the AG, also it says disclaimer. So I need to check your intervention. You can't have a functional structure, but you can't submit a proper documentation when you must be audited. So can also clarify me on the intervention on the two entities. Thanks.
Thank you, members. I think your presence, Deputy Minister, is really welcomed in a big way, and that's what maybe changes the modus operandi in terms of dealing with the annual reports, because we know that the entities are going to come, and maybe there will be supporting what you were saying by giving us reasons as to why your report is like this. However, I would want to ask the Deputy Minister to tell us, from the Auditor General's report last year, what were the challenges in implementing the plans that were put in front of us by your department to ensure that certain things are going in the right direction? I take it that the plan, whatever plan that they bring to Parliament, it's your plan. Also tell me, what were the mushrooms, when I say mushrooms, things that erupted unexpectedly in the process of implementing the plan to put the department in the right track? Then also, what is that is positive that has been done, and what has not been done? When I say mushroom, it's something that you did not expect at all when you were doing your plans, or you were doing your these plans that you do to fulfill your finance strategy. And seeing that instead of the department doing good in terms of the Auditor General's report, as your DG has alluded to, what is your plan? At least we have an opportunity now to talk to the executive and hear the plan. There is also something that was raised by the Auditor General that I did not understand. I think it's similar to what my colleague have asked. If your internal auditors or committees, they are doing their job to the latter, why then is there is no change or little change in terms of what the Auditor General is expecting. That's the report that they've gave there. We have their presentations in front of us. They've rated your internal auditors top. They are the most working. Then it means you are guided. And I know you chair one of the committees again. You meet with them. They are guided. Your department is guided now and again. Recommendations are made to your department. What are the problems? Because for me, if that was the case, if that is the case, then definitely the mushrooms that I'm talking about, we will hear them. Thank you. I will not give you an opportunity to answer these questions now. We'll have an answer session unless. Are you going to be with us, Deputy Minister, throughout? Okay, so we'll give you and we'll take the questions as they come from all the entities so that we do justice. Because what we do to let you all present, by the time we get to the last presenter, I'm sure some of us want to run, you're also running away. But at least you would have known what is that we want to know or are concerned with in your entities and in the department, so that even if we are not able to conclude, we have all the questions with you. So I will give over again, DG, to the entity that is following you in the
Thank you, Chair. The entity that is going to present now is the Unemployment Insurance Fund. I would like to apologize that the Commissioner is not here. The Commissioner is with the Minister in China. And we're going to ask Ms. Hilda Mhlongo to do the presentation on behalf of the Unemployment Insurance Fund. So with her is Judith Kumbi, who is the newly appointed Chief Director Operations, and also Ms. Feza Kapuzi, who is the CFO of the entity.
Thank you, DG, and good morning, Honourable Members. I will be presenting the annual performance report for the Unemployment Insurance Fund. However, I'm not going to dwell on the legislative mandate. I will go straight to slide number 12, which outlines the overall performance of the fund for the financial year 2016-17. We had 12 plan targets for the financial year. Of the 12, we achieved 6 and could not achieve 6. That's the overall performance of 50%. If you move to slide 13, we're outlining the challenges that we faced for the financial year with regards to those indicators that we did not achieve. Number one, in terms of percentage return on investment, we had a target of CPI plus 2.5% return on investment. We could not achieve that, and the reason was basically the economic outlook within the country. With regard to the corrective measure that you have put in place to address this, we are currently reviewing our investment strategy, and we're also looking at the portfolios that we invest our funds in. We have also appointed a company that advises us on actuarial services. They will be doing an evaluation for us and providing recommendations with regard to investment. The other indicator that we could not achieve in the financial year is the percentage of valid claims that we pay. We missed this target by 1%. The target was 90%. We achieved 89%. Basically, the challenge here was our systems that were most of the time down, burned with issues, and also what the assessments that we did indicated that we should actually have employees who are particularly focusing or specializing on UIF services. Thus, we are currently finalizing the filling of the 258 client service officers positions. This will be dedicated employees only focusing on UIF services. We are also reviewing our labor center model as we want to ensure that we centralize all services at labor centers. The other indicator that we did not achieve in the financial year is the percentage increase in revenue. With regard to the measures that we have put in place to address this, we are currently implementing our compliance strategy where we're trying to ensure that employers register and declare contributions on a monthly basis. We are also working hand in hand with our employer service inspectors to ensure that employers comply. We also did not achieve with regard to the indicator talking to percentage of overpayment balance collected. The challenge that we faced in the financial year is that we had a huge debtors book. And it was mainly because most of the people in the country are unemployed. Thus, if you want to collect overpayments from people who are unemployed, it became a challenge for the fund. Once again, here we're looking at implementing the compliance strategy to ensure that we reduce our debtors book. The other indicator that we did not achieve was the percentage of budgeted funds that we were supposed to transfer to Productivity SA for turnaround solutions. As a corrective measure, what we have done there, we have re-looked at our governance structures, and also we are looking at internal efficiencies. Thus, currently we have revised our standard operating procedure, which we believe will assist in us transferring the funds timely. We also did not achieve with regard transferring funds to the CITAS. Once again, we're looking at internal efficiencies. We're looking at how we do our work internally and have thus reviewed our standard operating guide just to streamline our internal processes. Chairperson, I'm going to hand over to the CFO to take us through the financials, and that starts on slide number 25.
Thank you, honorable members. I'll then take you through the financial performance of the fund. If we look at the revenue that we generated as a fund, we generated 18.2 billion as compared to the 17.1 billion in the prior year, which translates to a 7% increase. And if we look at the collection part of it, 90% of this collection of contributions are collected via SARS or by SARS. Then if we look at the benefits that we have paid for the year, we have paid 8.4 billion as compared to a 7.6 billion, which is a 10% increase in terms of our benefits. If we look at the makeup of the benefits themselves, 82% of this 8 billion is made up of unemployment benefits, followed by the maternity benefits and illness and dependence benefits. So you'd also note that due to the increase in the unemployment, the benefits have also increased. The income on investment has also increased by 19%, And this interest is as a result of investments that we invest with the PIC. There's dividends that we receive and other interests that we accumulate. If I may take the members again, in terms of our administrative expenses, our administrative expenses is just increased by 12%. The main cost drivers there, it would be your collections or the fees that we pay to SARS for collecting the contributions for us. So the more contributions we receive, the more rate, or rather more fees that we pay in line with the agreement. The same goes with the PIC. The more the portfolio grows, we also pay higher management fees. If we look at the poverty alleviation scheme, you'd also note that, again, there is an increase in terms of the spending there. The increase is about 81%. There's been more training interventions that we have done by the fund as compared to the prior financial year. Then if we look at the compensation of employees, you'd also note that the employee cost has increased. This is due to the fund implementing a new organizational structure. So we are also closing the vacancies that were there. Then if you look at the fair value adjustment, this is not your realized losses, but it is just the valuations of the investments at the time when we're closing the financial year. So there are losses then. Then we have the net surplus for the year. Then if we could continue again looking at the financial position, you'd note that again the fund has a very strong financial position. In terms of our property, plant and equipment, we have also increased by 16%, and that is due to the purchasing of computer equipment and computer software. Our current assets have also increased by 662%, but this is just due to the money that was owing at the time by the National Reserve Fund of about 1.7 billion. It was just a timing issue. At the 31st of March, the money was not transferred yet to the fund, but it was subsequently transferred in the first week of April. Our current liabilities have also increased by 22%. The main increase there is it was due to the benefit payable. This is the provision that we set aside for the claims that we expect from the beneficiaries or the claimants for the short period that is in your current, that is in your 12 months. Our total investment portfolio, it has also increased by 12%. And this portfolio or these funds have also been invested with the PIC in different instruments. Then if I could take the members into the AG audit opinion for 2016-17, the fund received a disclaimer opinion from AG, and the basis of the disclaimer, it was on investments mainly. I think the DG has deliberated more on the issue of the investment. One of the issues was the unlisted investments. The fund has invested in unlisted investment as part of its social responsibility investment. And according to AG and the GRAP standards, if we look at the ownership that we're having as a fund, the minute you have anything, or rather your ownership is more than 20%, GRAP statement requires us to consolidate, given that you are assumed to be having some significant power on those entities. But we had a different interpretation we had a consideration that we had, and somehow we differed with, or there was no agreement between us and AG at the time. But we have since started a process where we are seeking a legal, a technical opinion, so that we address this issue. We have also met with PIC, because if you look at the basis of AG not being able to conclude or agree to the figures that we had reported, it was due to insufficient evidence that was provided. We have since met with the PIC and gave them all kinds of info lists that AG and us require, so that we close this finding. For the fund, this is a new finding. It's not a recurring finding. The issue of investment, it was never raised in the last financial for the fund. So this is where we are sitting, but we have an action plan, a detailed action plan, trying to address these findings, and also ensuring that on a quarterly basis, because the other issue that was the main issue from AG, it was the related party confirmations, where when they went to PIC to get confirmations to confirm the balances that the fund was sitting with, there were differences that were picked up. But by the time we had to substantiate to AG what makes the difference, I think the audit was closed. There was no sufficient time for us to sit with AG to resolve these issues. But I can assure the honourable members that we've got an action plan, and we are working together with the compensation fund. Because if you look at this finding of the consolidation or the GRAP 6 and 7, it has been raised on both the funds, and we are working together, including PIC, to resolve this issue. Thank you, Chair.
Members, questions on UIF? Honorable America?
Thank you, ma'am. I'm just going to pick up on the last statement that was made with regard to the investment. We're speaking, thank you for the attempted clarification around the investment. One of the slides, I think that the third last slide, states that the value of unlisted investments in the annual financial statements did not agree to the amount in the supporting evidence. Consequently, consequently investments were understated by 721 whatever million rand. There was a resultant impact on the surplus of the period and on the accumulated surplus in the financial statements. Now, I want you to explain to me the relationship between the undervaluation of the unlisted investment and how it impacts upon the surplus of the fund. Is it because of the interest that ought to be earned or not? Maybe because I see no relationship between investment and surplus. Perhaps interest on investment and surplus could have a possible relationship. One other thing I'd like to... Now, we're talking about billions of rands here, and we say that there's no sort of obligation to have a meaningful say in those organizations in which you make the investment. If it's unlisted, there's no legislative requirement of you. I think you're working with money that belongs to the employees and employers who have contributed to their contributions over a number of years. That is being placed in your care and in your to invest wisely and to money available to fund your programs. So there need to be some sort of, it's my belief that there need to be some sort of oversight and proper management of where you invest money, because if it's merely just, you know, because I like that particular organization, therefore I'm going to invest in it, it's not good enough. And I know you have sourced a technical opinion in terms of precisely where you stand with regard to that, and perhaps once you have received that opinion, that you could possibly share it with the committee also, as well as, Madam Chair, as well as the action plan that you know, you have developed to address the shortcomings, because it's not small change we're talking about here. We're talking about billions and billions of rands, and we need to be absolutely sure that it's proper sort of management of the funds. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Lulu.
Thanks, Chair. Let me appreciate the report, though I thought it will shed some light on some of the issues lifted by AJ. Chair, I'm on slide 20 on the reason for the variance, where it says productivity SA picked up possible financial irregularities. It goes on to say, to this end, nothing has happened. Can we be given more clarity on that? What were those irregularities? And why is it that up to now nothing has been done? Because I think the last sentence there is saying, to this end, Productivity SA requested UIF to assist in investigating the financial irregularities. How far is that process? And also balance that with the time that the request was tabled by Productivity SA. Thanks, John.
Can we then go to compensation fund?
Thank you, Chair. The commissioners of human factor will do the presentation, and I think I've already indicated who is he with. In terms of the delegation of the compensation fund. Commissioner.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you, DJ. I'll start the presentation of the fund on page 2 of the handout, which is slide 4, which just shows the summary of slide 4, which shows the summary of the performance of the fund per two of the strategic objectives that we had in our APP. One, providing effective and efficient oriented client oriented support service, as well as providing fast and reliable accessible coin services. Chair, for the year under review, by end of quarter 4, the fund had achieved 50% of the targets that it had set, of the 18 targets that had been set for the 2016-17 financial year. With regard to the strategic objective number 1, we had achieved 25% of the targets that we had set, and then with regard to the second strategic objective of providing fast and reliable services, we had achieved 70% of the targets. The second slide, slide number 5, just shows the same performance per each of the 3 budget programs that we have in the fund, which comprises of administration and the head office operations, as well as the provincial operations, and it just shows that the provincial operations were able to achieve 80% of the targets that were set for provincial operations, 60% for those that were set for head office operations, as well as 25% for the ones that within the administration branch of the fund. If you go to page 9, Chair, if I can just touch on page 9, which is slide 19 to slide 23, which just shows up the areas where we have not achieved, which are the 9 strategic performance indicators or performance targets that we didn't achieve, and what are the reasons for that, as well as the action plans that we put in place to address those. First one is on the achievement of the implementation of the 3-year annual audit plan by the internal audit. We could not finalize all the activities that were identified in the internal audit plan, the main reason being that our internal audit started implementing the plan much late due to the fact that it was presented to the audit committee for approval only at the beginning of the financial year. So the approval process took time. What we're doing now with the subsequent audit plans is to make sure that these are presented to the audit committee at the end of the financial year, preceding the year in which they're going to implement the plan, so that at the beginning of the financial year, that process, the auditing staff is supposed to be dealing only with the planning at that time. The second one was the indicator relating to a percentage of active registered employers whose assessments are finalized by the end of the financial year. We had set a target of 60% of all active employers need to have been assessed in terms of them submitting their annual return of earnings and paying the assessment. We could only hit about 95% of this target, which is around 54% of the employers were not actively assessed. I think the main reason there was the issue of non-compliance by employers. And what we are doing now is we have partnered with the inspection and enforcement branch of the department. We've signed an MOU with specific areas of cooperation with the effort of improving compliance to the COID legislation, as well as improving compliance to the OHS legislation so that we prevent workplace accidents from happening. And in terms of this partnership now, we are training inspectors on the details around how to deal with employer assessments and what are the issues to look out for when they're doing inspections, so that we can then start improving compliance by employers in this area. Over and above that, in the long term, we are amending the specific provisions in the COID legislation that make it difficult to enforce the compliance on employers, because it requires a lengthy criminal procedure where we find employers not complying, as opposed to an administrative process that imposes fines that enables the inspectors to be able to enforce those fines that we need to impose on the non-complying employers. The third one was on the percentage of increase in investments, in the returns on investments. We had set a target of CPI plus 2% as our return for all the investments that we make through the PIC. So the target was then 8.28%, but we were only able to hit 7.17%, largely due to the fact that the economic conditions were a bit depressed and we were not able to outperform the benchmark that we had set for ourselves. One of the things that we're doing was the revision of our investment strategy to make sure that it aligns with the current economic conditions that are in the economy. The other two was indicators relating to the reduction of the findings that had been raised by the Auditor General in the prior years in the fund. And we had targeted about 78 of the findings that had been found in the previous 3 years of the fund, and we were able to clear about 12 of those. The others, they are still in progress. We found that the best way to deal with some of these things is to deal with the root causes of the challenges rather than clearing the findings themselves and the same problem occurring again in the following audit cycles. So we are engaged in a number of projects that are aimed at dealing with the root causes of this findings, and mainly those are the issues that were raised earlier around the revenue as well as our claims management unit. We also had the last one that we didn't achieve on the administration side was on around the issue of vacancies. The target was to have vacancy rate of not more than 10%. at the end of the financial year, we were we had sitting with about 10.3% vacancy rate, and I think one of the big challenges was the fact that we had been the difficulties in trying to attract or recruit and attract some of the specialized skills that we require, particularly in the medical services area, which has led to lengthy delays in the appointments, something that we've been able to overcome now in the first quarter of this financial year. With regard to our core business, there were three indicators that we didn't achieve. One was on the reviewal of the compensation benefits in terms of annual adjustments of benefits. The reason we didn't achieve this because the benefits were finally approved at the beginning of the financial year in April. Mainly the reason was that we started with the consultation process, because the process, it requires us to consult with the public where we publish the improvements in the Government Gazette, and after consultations only then do we submit them for approval by the minister and then publish those that the minister has approved. So the process started a bit late and it took us longer to do the consultations. What we're doing now this year is we started the process much earlier. We started the process of review at the beginning of the financial year, so that we can get the final approval from the minister before the end of the calendar year, so that at the beginning of the 2018 calendar year, the approval has already been obtained and we're just working on publishing and being ready for implementation the 1st of April 2018. The second one was on the implementation of an electronic case management system for our tribunal hearings, our Section 91 tribunal hearings, and for managing all the cases that we have in the fund from a legal point of view. Here, mainly the project was delayed by a number of factors relating to the licenses that we needed to finalize of SAP licenses. But we will be going live now with the system in December 2017. The project is already at an advanced stage. The last one was on the, we had two targets with regards to finalization of claims. We had one target where we say claims needs to be finalized within, just about 85% of claims need to be finalized within 60 days of receiving the claim. The second one was also making sure that by the end of the financial year, about 90% of the claims are finalized that have been received. So we achieved the one of finalizing them within 60 days, but the ones where we had to achieve about 85% within by the end of the financial year, we only got to about 73%. The subsequent slides here, Chair, are the slides that then goes, that shows the impact of the work that we've done over the last financial year. If you look at slide 25, just shows the number of claims that we have dealt with in the last financial year, 155 claims that we've received, and we've been able to adjudicate 132 of these claims, and only about 9,505 remained at the end of the financial year, had not been dealt with. And the second slide on slide 26 just shows the number of medical claims that we were able to deal with. It just shows that we're able to finalize about 686,385 medical claims that we've received. I'll give over to Mr. Korta to just take us through slides 25 and 26, which talks to the financial performance of the fund.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just take us through the financial performance of the fund. Revenue from non-exchange transactions increased by 20%. This was mainly due to increase in new registration and the estimation policy that the compensation fund applied on non-complying employers. Revenue from exchange transactions increased by 11%. This is mainly due to investment returns being higher than the prior period. Expenditure increased by 32%. The main drivers of that was benefits. Basically, the provision in terms of the benefits was less than the prior year. And then another driver in there that contributed was general expenses. There was a off expense in terms of breach of contract last year, which amounted to about 349 million, which was not incurred in the current period. And then looking at the other expenditure and adjustments, there was an improvement of about 3 billion. That 3 billion basically is talking to the improved fair value adjustments that we had. Last year we suffered a big fair value adjustment of about 3.2 billion. And then this year that improved significantly. We had only about 200 million. And then going to the financial performance, the next slide. Our current assets, they increased by about 9.4 billion. Out of that 9.4 billion, 6.3 billion is talking to investments. And I would like to address investments in total. And then the remaining 3 billion is talking to receivables from non-exchange transactions, which actually increased by 2.6 billion. That was talking to our estimation policy. And then another factor there, we had actually a write-off of interest and penalties to the amount of about 2 billion. That was due to the past issue of the system that was not correctly calculating the interest and penalties, and therefore the employers were unfairly charged, and then that was written off in the current year. And then another issue there, if you can see, I have actually accounted for about 1.5 billion plus 3 billion, and then we had actually a reduction of 1.2 billion in our provision for assessment not raised, so coming to about basically that 2.6 in total. And then we'll be moving to non-current assets. Non-current assets, that 2.1 billion negative is talking to investment. And then above there was an issue of about 6 billion in investments. So in total, the investment movement was about 4 billion coming from the non-current and current assets. So the main drivers of that investment, that 4 billion, was that improvement in fair value adjustment of 3 billion. And then we contributed 300 million that was coming from what we collected from the employers putting in PIC. And then plus the investment returns of about 400 million, making that 4 billion. And then our current liabilities, they improved by 10%. Basically, they decreased by 10%. The main drivers there was our accruals, that breach of contract that we accrued of about 358 million. It was paid. And then we had an improvement, basically, in debtors with credit balances that decreased by about 200 million, talking to us paying back those employers who are sitting with credit balances. And then moving from that, going to non-current liabilities, that is mainly due to COIT liabilities, the provision for claims to be paid, and then the capitalized value of pensions. That was the actuarial exercise that was done by our actuaries. And then that was the adjustment, basically, due to that exercise. Thank you.
Thank you, the CF members, Honorable America.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Mafata, for your presentation. Commissioner, last year, you're not so lonely at the bottom. You have finally been joined by a partner in the form of the UIF. We know that you've been languishing at the bottom for consecutive years. But as we've expressed last week, that we are confident and we are optimistic that we have seen movement in you turning around the department, and we hope perhaps within the near future that you will emerge out of the disclaimer area within the audit outcome chart or hierarchy, so to speak. So the question that I would like to get clarity on is some of the performance challenges that you have, and here I particularly want to address this question towards the audit outcomes of this past financial year, and your progress with regard to that. And I know at previous interactions with yourself and the department, you have convinced us that there are historical sort of disclaimer issues that need to be cleared up, and that in the process of addressing those sort of matters that were raised in the past, it is your belief that to prevent the recurrence, you want to root it out, you know, you want to go to the root of those particular problems. But here we are towards the end of the year, and in your presentation you state that after issues raised by the Auditor General, 40% of the findings, and that includes historical findings, to date you have only addressed 5% of those issues. So, is it because of a lack of capacity? And I know at the presentation last week you have stated that you are in the process of appointing skilled people, and the medical practitioners you appointed in the various provinces and within your office as well, the head office. Is it because of that that you're unable to make quicker progress in terms of addressing those shortcomings? Because as long as those shortcomings are not adequately addressed, you will continue to have these challenges where you don't verge out of the bottom. Madam Chair, lastly is that the current individuals who have been identified as being responsible or alleged responsible for irregular and wasteful and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and where these clear-cut cases of complicity in these matters has substantial any action been taken? And then earlier I referred to this Excel spreadsheet that lists all these sort of individuals. Is it possible for us to, you know, have access to that, and so that we could also for ourselves, you know, see, you know, what the progress with regard to disciplinary action that your department is taking against officials who are not executing the task diligently and obviously with the necessary competence and honesty. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Not of the time. Thank you, Chair. On your program 3, the 2016-17 annual achievement,
I need clarity. It says off there, and it doesn't state the number of received. And then it says 28,754 compensation benefit claims. No, I don't understand this. I need clarity on it. And on slide, I think it's 14, the screen there is very small, chair. On not achieved, bidding process not yet completed. When would it be completed?
Thank you, Honorable. The lunch has been served, so allow 10 minutes for members and the department just to dish, and then we eat. Those who are not done, and then we'll continue the meeting while the others are eating. So the meeting then is adjourned, and the people who should be ready for the next presentation is CCMA for 10 minutes. You can have served.